At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Okay, here you go. This economy in one short, sweet quote.
Just great. Yeah, pretty calm. No unpleasant surprises today.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today. This one is the 29th of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We're going to do that thing that happens not infrequently in business and economic reporting. We are going to give you the headline. We're going to tell you what it means. Then we're going to tell you why it might not mean what everybody thinks it means.
I wouldn't say that I guessed the number was going to be exactly 5.2, but seeing a revision of 0.3%, I'm not shocked by it.
That's Laura Veldkamp. She's a professor of economics and finance at Columbia Business School, talking about the economic headline of the day, that estimates of economic growth in the third quarter have been bumped up. Better than 5%, by the way, in the third quarter is a lot.
Typically, really strong growth is an upward force on inflation. And so the concern this number raises is not that we're in a recession. The concern is that we might have continued high inflation.
So there's that, what the headline means. But there's also this.
One thing that came in this report is the weakness in GDI.
Economist Nicole surveys at Wells Fargo. And GDI is gross domestic income. It measures the economy basically by adding up all the incomes in it. And GDI was up 1.5% annualized in the third quarter. However,
that, if you look at it on a year-over-year basis, is actually negative. So what that implies is that the income side of the economy is pretty weak.
So strong economic growth with maybe some hidden weaknesses is where we seem to be. There was another item in today's report that caught our attention, a downward revision in consumer spending in the third quarter. Wasn't huge, that downward revision, but it does add some context to the huge Thanksgiving shopping numbers that everybody's been talking about the past couple of days. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has that one.
Americans spent more than ever over the holiday. More than 200 million people, a record number, looked for deals in stores and online. And while people spent a couple percent more this Black Friday weekend than last, they didn't necessarily buy more.
Inflation was running at about 3.2% year-over-year basis. So if you look at Black Friday sales overall, they're about down 0.7%.
Silvio Tavares is CEO of credit rating agency VantageScore.
So the reality is it's a bit of a head fake. If you actually take into account inflation, consumers actually spent less this Black Friday.
Tavares also warns that consumer credit card delinquencies are on the rise. So with all of this holiday shopping, especially with many consumers leaning on buy now, pay later systems,
the concern is at some point those credit card bills will come in. The pay later of buy now, pay later will come.
Natalie Cutler is the retail industry leader at accounting firm BDO.
And the consumers are going to be cutting as much as they can in making future purchases because the debt is becoming due or will become due.
which could mean rough times for retailers after the holiday season, although some are feeling the pinch already. Here's Rick Dreiling, CEO of Dollar Tree, in a call with analysts this morning.
Similar to what other retailers have reported, we experienced softening trends throughout the quarter as lower-income consumers responded to the accumulated impact of inflation and reduced government benefits. We saw a notable pullback in spending.
Retailers across the country are carefully watching how consumers across all income brackets are shopping this holiday season to see how significant that pullback is going to be. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, I'm just going to say it. I think traders are waiting to see what the Fed does, in which case it's going to be a long 2 weeks. Next meeting wraps up on December 13th. We will have the day's details when we do the numbers.
Well, we'll go to mission control last. I'll show you the spacecraft first.
All right. I'll show you the spacecraft first. I love my job. Do what you love, right? I'm in a warehouse in El Segundo, California, southwest of downtown L.A., out by the airport.
All right,
so this is very clean room looking.
That's right.
Right, kind of? It's got spotless white floors, high ceilings, headquarters of a company called Varda Space Industries.
Here's the spacecraft and the reentry capsule. So if it fits, it ships.
All right. So this is life size, right?
That's right. This is the real deal.
Will Brewey's the CEO. And the thing that we're looking at is honestly kind of flying saucer shaped, about 3 feet in diameter, 2.5 or so feet high.
We're looking at the reentry capsule. And inside here is the drug manufacturing module. So we manufacture the pharmaceuticals in space because removing gravity allows us to make medicines you otherwise couldn't on Earth.
Catch that? They make medicines in space. Pharmaceutical companies pay Varda to do experiments in orbit in the hopes of finding new drug formulations.
The gravity is kind of like a parameter. I kind of think of it as like as in a kitchen, because chemistry is chemistry and food is chemistry as well. So if you put a temperature knob on an oven, you create a whole world of new recipes and new food you can create. Similarly, if you can change gravity, you can also change the chemical process for drug formulations. We only make the active ingredients in space.
Varda's capsules hitch rides on missions from private companies, SpaceX, for instance, to get into space, and then come down in Varda's specially built reentry vehicles, which cost in the single-digit millions per mission.
And so we can make drug formulas that you couldn't make on Earth because we can change gravity.
Why drugs and not, like, widgets?
Great question, because drugs help people, and they're high dollar per unit volume, so they fit into a small reentry capsule like this.
To be clear here, most of the processes Varda does in space aren't mechanical. They're mostly just heating stuff up and cooling it down, mixing it together, kind of like cooking. Let's back up for a minute. You're a SpaceX guy from way back, right?
That's right.
Why the shift to manufacturing in space?
Because reusable rockets now make it so that you can go to space regularly and you can go to space cheaply. And so that opens up another industry that was not possible before.
There's a reason this company's here in this part of Southern California. SpaceX headquarters is just a couple of miles down the road, and this area has always been a hotspot for aerospace talent.
So your website says, low Earth orbit is now open for business, right?
That's probably on there somewhere.
It is. catchy phrase. What does that really mean, though? I mean, we're not there yet, I guess is what I'm saying.
We're damn close. So the way I think about it is shipping to space is now just shipping. If you can ship...
No, come on. You got to put it on a rocket. You got to get the FAA to buy off. You got to bring it back, which is a problem for you guys we're going to get to later, right? It's not just shipping. It's not like an Amazon van.
It's pretty close. So the way to think about it is like this. If you could, I stole this from Elon Musk, but he would tell us at All Hands all the time. If you could take a 737 and have to throw it out after every flight, that would be insane.
Right.
And now the exact opposite has changed with rockets. So every single rocket that's launched now from SpaceX can be reused.
Right. Which is great.
Wasn't done before.
Amazing.
Yeah.
At that point, the other Varda executive showing me around jumped in to help explain.
Tell us who you are.
Eric Lasker, CRO of Varda Space Industries.
CRO is?
Chief Revenue Officer.
Gotcha.
So trying to make a business out of everything that's in this room right now.
How's that working out for you?
it's actually going pretty well. We have two lines of business that are both stood up, and happy to talk through either of those. But just getting back to, you know, shipping to space is just shipping. If you go to spacex.com/rideshare, you can book a slot on a rocket today. That's what Will's actually talking about, is that we are not in the world of you need to get on top of, say, a shuttle mission. It's going to be a 2-3-4 year Fair. Process. Fair. You can actually go online today and you could book a slot on a rideshare mission just like Varda's doing right now.
I checked out that website, by the way. SpaceX will take capsules like Varda's into orbit for a couple of million dollars. And the bet Varda's making is that manufacturing in space is worth the cost. Here's CEO Will Brewey again.
Pharmaceutical companies are our customers. And by turning off gravity, we open up the envelope of possible drug formulas. And so we can offer a formula to a customer. For example, if right now you can only administer a drug through an IV bag, you can manufacture it in space, create smaller crystals so that you can get that through a shot. And so you're changing the patient experience and improving it that way with microgravity.
Gotcha. Yeah, exactly. Over on the pharma side, it's not inventing new molecules that, say, don't exist right now. It's taking those molecules that exist on Earth that have really been through the drug discovery process and reformulating them. So it's that formulation step where gravity really comes in.
And you guys build this capsule?
We did. Okay. Several of them, yeah.
All right.
One of them's in orbit right now.
Well, we're going to get there in a minute. Actually, we're going to get there right now. Because you got to bring this stuff back.
Absolutely.
And if you can't get it back, it's not much use to you, right? You do the science up there, but if you can't get it back, you're screwed, right?
Correct.
And you have one up there that you don't have, and I understand there's now a thing called a re-entry permit from the FAA, and you
That's
guys
right.
don't have one of those?
Not yet, but we're working on it right now.
Varda's been around for a little bit more than 3 years. They've got 80 employees, and their first capsule went into orbit on a SpaceX rocket this past June. They had planned to bring it down at a military test site in Utah a couple of months later until the FAA said, not so fast. So that gets me to the bigger question. How concerned are you about the regulatory process for space, right? Not so much the getting up there part, but now the getting back there part, right? Because people are up there, you want to get them back, regulations be damned, right? But you got this science experiment, you got to get it back, and the FAA says, oh, no, you got to fill out Form B14/2.
Form B is a killer.
Right? I know. I heard. I did my research.
Yeah. Yeah. So Part 450 is the governing reentry license from the FAA. I'm not worried long term because it is essentially paperwork at this point. But from a physics perspective, totally fine.
Are you guys a rocket company or a science company?
Oh, great question. So we are a reentry company, first and foremost, and really a life sciences company from a customer perspective. Our customers, they don't care that we're going to space. They just know that we can turn off gravity. So we have a unique way to manipulate chemical systems. But at the end of the day, that's what they care about most.
This industry is brand new. Regulatory agencies like the FAA are still figuring out how to deal with companies like Varda as they invent new ways to commercialize space. All right, roll with me on this question.
Please.
I'm a space aficionado from way back, and I'm sure you certainly are. I don't know about you. Okay, all right. So this is a false romanticism question, but doesn't this take a little bit of the romance out of space?
I will answer your question with a romantic answer. So I think that right now, if you live in Kansas, the International Space Station is actually closer to you than an oil rig. But an oil rig feels closer because it's part of the day-to-day economy. So I think when we have day-to-day flights to space to bring back drugs, it'll feel like part of the economy, and we will bring the stars to us. I think your children and our children's children will think of space as like the ocean in that way. It's a big, vast thing close to us, not us actually going to the stars.
How long did it take you to come up with that?
I just thought of it on the spot.
Oh, bull.
You asked me.
It's really good. It's really good. I don't buy that you just thought of it, but it's really good.
All right. Welcome to Mission Control, where Wendy runs the show.
Oh, here we go. This is,
and
this
also
is
the rest of the building.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Kai. Nice to see you. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. You get to hold the microphone now.
Oh, great. Hello.
Tell me who you are and where we are.
Yeah, my name is Wendy Shimada. I am the Vice President of Autonomous Systems, and we are here at the Varda Mission Control.
We should tell people what we're looking at. There's three huge screens on the wall. There's
there
a bunch
are.
Of computer monitors, and
yep.
there's all kinds of data and parameters, and everything's green except that one little red square there. What is that one little red square?
Yeah, we ignore that one.
Yeah. Okay. It's like when you're driving and your car makes funny noises and you just turn
yeah,
up the radio.
It's a known thing, yeah. So
okay,
we actually,
right.
These screens right now, the one far on the left actually shows us where we are in the orbit.
I was going to say, well, what are you looking at? Where are you in the orbit now?
Yeah, so the little blue dot right yeah. over there flying right over the coast of Maine or Cape Cod
yeah.
is where we are flying in space right now.
Nice. So this is going to be a stupid question, which I should have asked a long time ago. What's it been doing up there this whole time?
Right now, mostly just chilling. We check in. Yeah, we check in on her about once a week.
It's a
we
she?
Do. She is.
Okay. Yes. All right. That's fair. Just checking.
We check in on her about once a week, do some checkouts on the entire system. Otherwise, everyone's on call.
So the science is all done? I mean, the science runs autonomously up there, right?
That's correct. Yep.
So it's all done?
It's all done.
Okay.
Yeah.
So once you get this FAA permit to bring it back, mm-hmm. how are you going to do that?
Yeah, great question. So we have to do a series of what are called like propulsion burns to be able to change the orbit such that it can land in a place of our choosing. So for our first mission, it's Utah. For the future, we'll have other landing sites available for us as well.
Will, come here. So in 5 years, what's this company doing?
In 5 years, we're launching and re-entering spacecraft on a daily basis with pharmaceuticals on board.
After pharma, what are you going to do?
Well, I'll tell you this. The pharmaceutical industry is large. I don't see us moving outside of pharma for at least 5 to 10 years. But that being said, there are other industries that we can leverage a lack of gravity for.
Give me some for instances.
For instance, fiber optic cables. You can make some fiber optic cables with less attenuation, meaning that light shines farther and more efficiently through them if they're manufactured in microgravity. Another is silicon wafers. So you can make more perfect wafers, less imperfections if they're grown in microgravity. And these are all products of the International Space Station that has done research over the last 20 years, like any other national lab, but there hasn't been a commercial off-ramp for all of that research until Varda.
Where'd Varda come from?
Varda is the name of a elvish queen from one of the Tolkien books, the Silmarillion. She manufactures the stars, so it seemed like an appropriate name for a manufacturing and space business.
Was that you or one of your co-founders?
That was my co-founder, Delian, yeah.
Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Super cool. Super interesting.
A little postscript here, by the way. They are still waiting on that permit to bring down the first capsule in Utah. Next couple of missions, though, they're going to land in Australia. Coming up.
If that meeting had happened online, the Paris Agreement wouldn't have been adopted.
Climate diplomacy on Zoom? Maybe not. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 13 points today. We'll call that flat percentage-wise, 35,430. The NASDAQ went the other way, down 23.2%, 14,258. The S&P 500 down 4 points, just under a 10%, 45.50 there. Dollar Tree, which also owns Family Dollar, announced its earnings today. We heard a bit about that from Kimberly Adams. The discount chain reported net sales were up 5.4% to $7.3 billion in Q3. That's a lot of Dollar Tree. Looking at the competition, Walmart declined 1.6% today, 5 below, also due to report earnings today, down 1.8%. Bonds were up, yield on the 10-year T-note down to 4.26%. Take that, Jay Powell. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there.
This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. All right, I'm going to walk you through a data sequence en route to this next story. In 2021, sales of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and straight-up fully electric vehicles were 8.5% of all new light-duty vehicle sales in this economy. In 2022, it was 12.3%. So far this year, 15.8%. And in the third quarter of this year alone, 17.7%. That's according to the Energy Information Administration, which we should say gets its data from Ward's Intelligence. Anyway, all of that, if you plot it on a chart, is a trend. Marketplace's Samantha Fields explains what's going on.
More people are buying electric vehicles these days, partly because there are more of them to buy. Pandemic supply chain issues have eased, and
manufacturers have been offering more EV makes and models.
Michael Dwyer at the Energy Information Administration says there are almost three times as many kinds of EVs to choose from now as there were in 2020. More SUVs and crossovers, and now pickup trucks, too.
A space that hasn't had any electric options at all until last year.
Car companies are also making more hybrids, says Stephanie Brindley at S&P Global Mobility.
Honda, for example, is getting more aggressive about making sure that they have more CR-V hybrids available. Toyota has more and more models that are hybrid only.
And she says hybrids appeal to a different kind of person than EVs do.
Today, electric vehicles are still being sold primarily to innovator and early adapter buyers. You have a whole mainstream buyer out there who's interested in participating more, but not necessarily ready to take the full leap. And a hybrid gives them that opportunity.
Most EVs on the market now are also luxury models and more expensive upfront than hybrids and gas-powered cars. But Jessica Transic at MIT says prices have come down this year.
You see 20% drops, you know, 10%, 5%. Some of that is improvement in the underlying technology. Some of that is what's called forward pricing, where companies are pricing strategically in order to gain market share.
But for EVs to be more accessible to more people, she says, we're going to need more affordable entry-level models to come out. And that's just starting to happen. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
There's almost nothing as affordable as a good podcast. Good thing we've got one then. Platform of your choice, of course, or marketplace.org. Check it out. The UN's big climate conference, COP28, starts tomorrow. Negotiators from almost 200 countries have been making their way to Dubai for conversations and consultations that are crucial if we're going to be able to limit greenhouse gas emissions the way we need to. Holding this conference every year means thousands of people are getting on planes, burning jet fuel, and adding to global greenhouse emissions. And this year they're doing it on the way to a country, the United Arab Emirates, whose economy depends on climate warming fossil fuels. Marketplace's Henry Epp reports on what the location and the leadership of this year's conference might mean.
Okay, so say you're one of the over 70,000 people planning to go to COP28 in Dubai and you want to reduce your personal carbon emissions by not flying there. Here's the problem.
Dubai is surrounded by conflict zones, which blocks these land routes from Europe, Asia, and Africa.
Carol Roberts researched this issue at University College London. She says holding COP28 in Dubai means essentially everyone has to fly, which means more carbon emissions.
In our analysis, we showed that commercial air travel was 4 times more polluting than train transport.
And 6 times worse than bus travel. So if you're coming from the UK, as some of Robert's fellow researchers are, your least bad option is to take a train or bus to Istanbul, then fly the rest of the way, which might take more time than you can spare. But if you decide that's worth it, here's the reality. You'll be attending a conference hosted by a petrostate and led by a guy named Sultan Ahmed Al-Jaber.
Sultan Al-Jaber is someone who wears many hats.
Ben Stockton is an investigative journalist with the Center for Climate Reporting. Not only is the Sultan leading COP this year,
but he is also CEO of the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, which is the UAE state-owned oil company.
It's the first time a CEO of any corporation, let alone a fossil fuel company, has led COP, Stockton says. And as Al-Jaber has met with top government officials in the lead-up to the climate conference, he's thoroughly mixed his two roles, Stockton has reported.
Documents that we obtained suggest that Al-Jaber has planned to use these meetings to lobby on oil and gas deals on a number of different occasions.
One way to think of it, according to Andreas Sieber, an associate director of policy at the climate nonprofit 350.org.
It's like making the CEO of a cigarette company presiding over a conference on lung cancer and its treatment.
Sieber worries about how Al-Jaber might influence the conference's outcome.
We are afraid and concerned that when there is actually quite a momentum to agree on phasing out fossil fuels, phasing in renewables, that he will just pick what he likes and what's comfortable for his business interests.
So given all of this, that you have to fly to attend COP, which is being led by an oil CEO, is it worth it to be there in person?
This is something that everybody who's involved in these negotiations wrestles with.
Kaveh Gyllenpour is Vice President of International Strategies at the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions. He's concluded that, yes, it is worth it, because as he's learned through working as a negotiator at past COPs, most of the actual negotiating happens outside the official meetings.
By the time you actually sit down behind your country flag and negotiate, a lot of the work has been done. And if you're not there, you won't be party to any of that. You're kind of seeing the products of a lot of work that's been happening in the corridors.
He says that's almost impossible to replicate online, and in-person negotiations have gotten results before. He points to 2015.
I can unequivocally say that if that meeting had happened online, the Paris Agreement wouldn't have been adopted. It just would not have been possible to deal with the complexity in real time of what was happening in an online setting.
And this is the most important COP since Paris, Gyllenpour says. The conference will include the first big status update on nations' promises to cut emissions, and countries will debate how to pay for climate-related damages in developing nations. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, if you're looking for one quote, just a single sentence to sum up the economic mood in this country right now, look no further than today's beige book, the Federal Reserve's once every 8 weeks anecdotal look at this economy divided up by regional Federal Reserve Bank districts. The quote in question comes to us from the 9th District, the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, and a banker in northern Wisconsin who said this: people are mad about eggs costing more, but they'll still buy a car. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context, a quick follow-up to a story Henry Epp did for us last week. OPEC Plus is set to meet tomorrow, production cuts being the main agenda item. This, then, from the Wall Street Journal this afternoon: new cuts of as much as 1 million barrels a day are apparently on the table, about which two things. Number one, the cartel historically has had a tough time getting its members to stick to those ostensibly agreed cuts. And also, number two, we use almost to the drop all the oil we pump globally every day, so it does not take much to upset the proverbial apple cart. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Justin Dueler, Drew Jostet, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Dorado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.